This is Biz Radio host Joanna Patrice Haggerty. I am the founder of JPH Creative Biz and soon to launch Art Hero, a workforce development organization. My mission is to support and galvanize artists and creative entrepreneurs because art heals and connects. I believe that by activating creativity, we synthesize change. Come connect with me on Instagram at JPH Creative Biz.
Live events are coming back, but is your digital marketing strategy ready to go? Hi, I'm Mikey Spice Evans of Spice Digital Solutions. I'm on a mission to help your event sell more tickets this season. Keeping up with the latest digital marketing trends is difficult enough. You need a digital marketing partner that will help you reach your goals. Visit us at spicedigitalsolutions.com/bizradio to book a free consultation with us. That is spicedigitalsolutions.com/bizradio.
Do you know that 70% of women in the United States wear a size 14 or larger? Despite this, many top brands don't carry plus size options, and if they do, they charge premium prices. At More to Love, we believe everybody deserves affordable and fashionable clothing. That is why we carry new and gently used plus size clothing for a fraction of the original price. We are located at 606 New Leicester Highway behind Wynn's Diner beside the Sonnet.
This is the Joanna Patrice Haggerty Show, where I invite the most innovative entrepreneurs, artists, and creative business owners to share their experiences, processes, practical tips, and inspirations. Today with me is Kevin Evans. Kevin is a poet, writer, and performer whose family's American roots are mostly derived from Mississippi. Kevin was born in Marcopia County, Arizona in 1982 in an Air Force family and incidentally relocated to Las Vegas, Nevada the same week of his birth. He began writing creatively in the third grade, mostly detective and horror stories for fun on the weekends. He began writing lyrics and poetry in his early to mid-teens and is first performed as a teenager under the tutelage of the poet Glynis Redman. His first performances were at the Diana Wortham Theater. He has locally been a member of Asheville Slam, as well as a collective called Poetry Cabaret, which combines music, poetry, dance, etc. I brought Kevin on to talk about his work as a poet and a creative, but first, Kevin, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Joanna.
Yeah, we're so thrilled to have you. You and I have kind of known each other for a couple of years now, mostly through poetry and the creative scene, and I've just always really been impressed with your style and had no idea about Glynis Redman. I think we need to unpack that a little bit today.
Oh yeah, I could tell you all about that story too. We could go way back.
I love it. Well, I do usually like to start with just a quick little synopsis. You did a great job in your bio of telling us a little bit about where you came from, but why did you find yourself being drawn towards lyrics and poetry and performing?
I think initially what happened as a real youngin, as they say, I would say early elementary around the time, or even before the third grade when I started writing creatively on my own, I would hear music and I would hear lyrics and I would get these little visions. So there was always this muse, this buzz in me, but I didn't always know what to do with it. So I guess that's where that just kind of comes from, is just naturally kind of just in the way you step, the way you think.
And I love that people who have chosen to stay in creativity and perform and write as an adult have really all seemed to ground out in that magical inspiration of creativity and fun with it, right? We didn't have to care if this poem was perfect or if our song was absolutely ridiculous as we were counting blocks or whatever we were doing.
Yeah, that's the coolest thing about it. When it's creative, it does get you connected to that inner child once again, where you don't care as long as you're having fun and it's something that moves you in some way, even if it just moves you to dance or to like smile or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. I think that's the important thing, to enjoy it, and the audience will enjoy it the more you enjoy it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's tough as adults, right? We get into our egos and we're like, wait, is this good? Are people going to like it? I don't, you know? So I love that. Well, okay. Tell me, Glynis Redman, where did that come from?
Okay. So when I was 15 years old, I believe, I was a freshman at Asheville High School. There was a gentleman by the name of Christopher Tunstall who had one of the elective blocks. And by default, I ended up in his class versus Miss Geithner's class, which Miss Geithner was a great woman, great teacher, but nobody wanted to be in her class because she was so tough.
She's the tough one. Yeah, yeah. We know that feeling.
So by default, a lot of the people who chose to be in Christopher Tunstall's class ended up in Miss Geithner's class because she was like, gotcha. But I somehow eluded that. And ended up in Christopher Tunstall's block, and he was a very interesting fella, and he was trying to start a program called Project STEAM, Success Through Education and Motivation. So eventually he had a space in downtown Asheville, I would say in 1997, which is basically where, what is it called? Rhubarb, I think, is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's in that space where all those lawyers' offices and things exist. He had three stories at one point in that building. One of them was a computer lab. At the very bottom, we had an arcade that we had to run on the weekends. And on the top floor was like the little business offices and whatnot. So that was how I met Glennis Redman. She was a mentor to us and was doing a program for poetry and writing. And we had to learn and memorize poems. And we had to write original poems and perform them at the Diner Wortham. And that was the first time I performed to that kind of audience live in their face. And I was so frightened until I got out there. Then I was so alive. It was another world then.
Wow. What an amazing opportunity. And to have grown up in, you know, this area, you know, in the late 90s, it has changed a whole lot, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
But yeah. I would say that, you know, and I would love to get your perspective. It feels like that creative heartbeat that's kind of always existed of people coming here and being creative and getting healed through arts and nature still feels like it's pretty strong and alive here. Yeah,
absolutely. Because, well, the thing is, the landscape around us, the only thing that really changes about that is, I mean, of course, more trees get cut down, you lose more farmland, things of this nature. But the mountains and the rivers and the waterfalls and all of these things and the fresh air are always going to draw people to this area, even if some people will naturally avoid Asheville if they're outdoors people at this point, because, you know, it may be a bit much for them.
Yeah. That's true. Well, I would love to hear a little bit about the style of your poetry and your writing and the work that you really engage in. Like, where are your inspirations really pulled from?
I would say somewhere between like Maya Angelou, Tupac, Bob Dylan.
Yes.
Langston Hughes, I mean, Towns Van Zandt. We could go on and on. I was really inspired by lyricists growing up. Lyricists who were really saying something that really spoke to me, that really moved me. It was like it was my song, even though they wrote it. That I was always inspired by that kind of thing.
Well, and it seems like that you have pulled from a wide breadth of different times as well, right? That you didn't just mention something from hip hop in the 90s. You know, you went way back to, I would imagine that being influenced by art from so many different decades certainly plays into your eclectic sound and style now.
Yes, it does. It does. And I feel like just as all the people we come across become a part of us, vice versa, these people are part of us. We're part of them. So the stories or any words that I express or any art is really the story of everybody I've ever known or will know or even never met in a sense.
Well, and I think you're the kind of creative that really reflects that concept back. Like we started the show talking a little bit about the ego side and really wondering whether we're doing the right stuff. But I feel like when you can really sit in the idea of being this humbly blessed person to bring forth thoughts that exist in the world and to reflect back things that have inspired you, you're in a position to continue to have that ripple effect, because people are scared, I think, of creativity sometimes. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I would agree on that. Sometimes it distracts them from the 1-2-3, 1-2-3 that they used to. But I feel like true creativity really does come from the womb and the roots of everything. Like when I think of just the natural buzz of creativity, it makes me think of my paternal grandmother, who only had a third grade education and would just walk around the house humming. She was a total clean freak because she cleaned houses for a living. But she owned her own house even in the 60s somehow. Wow. And all kinds of, she accomplished some pretty amazing things, raised some pretty successful kids all in all. But she would always have this hum about her, just to be alive, just to move around, just to be breathing, just to see the sun come up. And that was just her vibe. And I think a lot of that vibe is how I create, and that what I try to connect to when I think of like creativity and coming from a pure place.
I love that. The idea of boring ourselves into creativity is what allows for a meaningful life. I mean, I completely agree. And that's why you and I pursue the worlds we do, right?
That's right. That's right.
Well, I would love if you have any tips or thoughts or suggestions for people who are maybe struggling with getting into their creativity. What do you do when you're in a rough place of not feeling connected to that?
Good question.
I know you've got some answers. Don't even.
and I'm always working through that. I love music therapy. Just listen to your favorite songs, no matter what's going on. That's a lot of times helpful. But also speak to some of your favorite people, reach out to them.
Yeah.
And just go to your favorite places, whether that's literally fit, figuratively, physically, or whatever the case may be. Try to get to your favorite places and see what happens then. And if that doesn't work, do something completely opposite of what you normally do.
That was actually what I was just about to say. I was like, I feel like we're about to play devil's advocate. You either get real comfy with it or you get real uncomfy with it, I think, are your options, right?
Absolutely.
I love it. Well, I am curious if you would be totally open and on the spot to performing some of your amazing poetry and giving us a little bit of backstory on what you choose, if you so choose.
Sure. Well,
and you typically memorize your poems, right? Like you have most of them.
Well, there's so many.
Some stick through.
No, I have some memorized, but today I think I'll read off the paper, and it's actually untitled poem. And I think it's about going back to innocence. I just liked some of the imagery in it, and I keep coming back to this poem in open mics and whatnot. It was written July 5th, 2011.
Oh, wow. Well, this will be great to hear.
Without the benefits of the sin, I've done it again, again. Brandish family jewels in blindfolded stupor, serenaded with phantom syringe into manic delirium. And Lucifer's gift is looser, but I am not devil or Satan worshiper, nor satin, nor palace mansion. No dancing dreamers can dampen this steamer. I think you know where your toes follow. Give a holler when you get your life back again to father a lady or gentleman blended better than your original sin. Smelling like afterbite of original victim. An afterlife, bath for the foolish and wise. Afterglow, gently go get him till his shine has completely risen. Just a time that for you is the present and not hidden. Without the benefits of the sin and origin. Orgy for the poorest souls of ladies and gentlemen crumbling into torn parts of their children. You aren't even around to see them. And she comes around and you are pendulum. Pushes all of your buttons because she knows she can bend them. Tree limb arms, scissor tail against your heart just before dawn. And you lead her on. And you brought her fox. You brought her owl, blessed moon streak. You took to the summer at the tip of the top of the best christened city.
And now she is sitting in the sea laughing and bleeding from her loin naturally. You are confused and wonder how she's walking, your tongue and trunk on a chained, linked leash. Though this isn't the time to be bitter leaf. With your children, play their whole life long from the hills to the beach. And let them play those keys. And let them sing.
That's it. Wow. I still don't know what to call it.
You know, it's interesting. I hear so many nature references in this poem, which is really cool because I completely agree with you. I'm seeing this vision of this sort of crumbling of the adult ego and reality we're living in and trying to just get back into earth and nature and art and creativity. And oof, I love it. I also really love that you have such a lyrical way about speaking your poems. Can you talk about how you developed that? I mean, I could just listen to you read poems for, I mean, days probably.
I would have to say the first person that really got me out of my shell off the paper was Glynis Redmond. I just, at the time when I met her and we were doing off the page type of stuff or memorizing, I was so shy. I could barely talk to any of my classmates or anything. I kept to myself just purposely. Like there were people that I could have hung out with or whatever, but I just didn't really approach many people. But performing and creating, especially when I had to look at people's faces and do it right in front of people like that, it kind of broke me out of that shell and made me more of a talker, so to speak.
Yeah. I mean, I completely agree. I personally was really shy and introverted as a kid, and it was the arts. I was in Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and I was Violet Beauregard. There's this one scene that I came actually from like the audience, and I just walked through the audience, and I'm just like smacking gum and being sassy and just playing a character I had never even imagined I was possible of doing and putting on. And I think that for people like you and I who had a little bit of that fear of stepping out, poetry, arts, creativity, standing on the stage in that way, oof, there's something really powerful. It's a little
it's
safer.
Very liberating.
You've also done some work putting some music behind some of your poetry, right?
That's correct. The biggest collaborator for that and one of my favorites is with Aaron Price.
Oh, Aaron.
So we've been friends for probably about 10 years, but we've collaborated on many things live and otherwise in studio, much of which most people haven't heard much of that, a lot of that stuff. And I like that it's still in the vault. One day it will be heard and it will be shared, but there's so much.
What is that process like, taking your art and kind of working with Aaron in that way? It sounds like, from what I know, it's really organic. There's not a lot of preemptive, like, hey, I want it to sound like this.
Yeah, we're trying to do more of that. And we are very conceptual in a lot of ways, but we just haven't had a whole lot of time to do too much conceptualizing as far as a whole album project up to this point. Well, there has been. There was one we did at Collapsible Studios called Carapace, actually. That was really cool. But that's something I still have to get on the platforms and whatnot. I want to get it more fine-tuned anyway. I'm a perfectionist in certain ways. Like, I'm not really looking for perfection, though. That's the funny thing. I don't want it to be just right. I just want it to be, like, the best.
It needs to be right for me, not perfect. Yes, I agree. I always say I'm a recovering perfectionist, and I think that shift into always wanting to feel like it's completed versus it being perfect has been such a valuable thing for me.
Yes.
Well, I would love in the last couple minutes before we have to wrap the show up for you to talk a little bit about the play you were just able to be in last weekend during Juneteenth and the Grind celebration.
Okay, Savagery. We did that. We performed that on Friday night as part of a Juneteenth celebration. And basically, Savagery is about a conversation about kind of like Jim Crow era ideas, but also the Willie Lynch letter, which is basically a supposed letter written from one plantation owner to many other plantation owners in his vicinity or his area as to how to subjugate and run your slaves and things of that nature, how to stay in power, basically. So there's a bartender who is the guy, the individual I played, and two young ladies, two women come in there from a night class, and they were just studying the Willie Lynch letter, and they had their certain feelings about it. And it just turns into a conversation. It's basically a conversation piece. And even afterwards, we had a 30-minute panel for the audience, which was the audience was very it was very well represented as far as not just Black people, but white people as well, and different age groups.
Yeah.
So that was pretty excellent. So
I mean, and I just think that as we have to kind of wrap up today, like that's something I'd love to come on and we could talk more about and really unpack. But the concept that we are being able to bring these conversations to the table, and it really circles back in everything you were talking about, being inspired by music, arts, creativity, and history, and being able to perpetuate those conversations and move forward, not towards perfection, but better, right?
Yes, exactly.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. I would love for you to let the audience know how they can connect with you. How can they find out more about the poetry and the stuff that you do?
Okay, well, you can follow me on Instagram at Kev Swamps. It's KEVV_Swamps with a Z at the end.
Yes.
That's on Instagram.
Love that.
You can follow me as Kevin Evans on Facebook. Where else? Follow Sovereign Kava. If you subscribe to their YouTube channel, they have an open mic every week. I'm not on every week, but I've been a participant many times on that. I do have a YouTube channel, but I haven't like done anything with that in over a week.
Basically, people have to want to find you, and they have to want to invest in you as a creative. Is that what I'm hearing? For now,
yeah. But I have plenty of work to do. Like we said, better.
That's right.
To improve.
Step by step. Well, again, Kevin, thank you so much for being here today.
Yes, thank you.
Awesome. And as always, this is the Joanna Patrice Haggerty Show, where we share tips and tools of our community's most innovative entrepreneurs, artists, and creative business owners. Thank you so much for tuning in, and please connect by visiting bizradioasheville.com or on Instagram at jphcreativebiz. I would love to hear your show suggestions or any questions you may have. And as always, stay creative.
Thank you for listening. If you liked what you just heard, be sure to subscribe to the podcast and be sure to visit bizradio.us to find hundreds of other engaging conversations, local events, and more.